All right. Well, hello everyone. My name is Shayan, and today I am going to talk about one of the aspects of our lecture from the day three of the Include course. And yeah, I guess with that, just very broadly speaking, we discussed greening workplaces and what that might entail. We talked about transportation and land use development, and we also talked about the role of municipalities in these new developments. And between these three, the one that stood out the most to me is greening workplaces. It's something I've been thinking about for a few years now, and I think I originally got into it as a result of if you look at the U.S. elections in around 2015 or so, when all the different candidates were running, there was like, you know, lots of Republicans. I think 16 of them were nominees, and then it was like four or five Democrats to begin with. And then, you know, you ended up having Hillary Clinton and Trump as the nominees. And a lot of the discussion on, you know, the Paris Climate Accord and kind of the IPCC reports and how we need to move forward with a lot of those stuff was on a transitioning from fossil fuels to renewables, and especially like coal to renewable resources. Now, the problem is that what you saw happen, this is fascinating, is that the Republicans, and especially Trump in this case, you know, rallied, went into states with lots of coal miners and such, and rallied them in, you know, he had a slogan, Trump digs coal. For those of you who are not native speaker, digs coal means, you know, was really into or loves like coal. You know, talked about how you're going to have quote unquote clean coal and expand it, et cetera, so forth, right? And I think this talks to the insecurity in some ways, right, of like the fear of losing jobs that, you know, while they might be somewhat dangerous, the skills aren't necessarily very easily transferable. So that's one thing. So, you know, there's need for education on one hand. And then, you know, geographically, it's not like you're necessarily going to have the wind parks and the same place as you had the coal mines. So those concerns were there. And I saw that the right used these fears in order to kind of tap into those demographies and effectively win their vote. So as a result, it's kind of something I've been thinking about how in some ways elitist the green transition might appear, right? Especially if you're living in rural country, and especially if you don't really even believe in climate change, which is a substantial number of people, even in North America, and less so in Western Europe, but still. So those are those. There's all these talks about it being Chinese hoax, right, in the US, which Trump loves talking about. But kind of more directly in about our lecture today, yeah, I'd start with this part piece of our course curriculum, which was also mentioned in the presentation. It's in quote, paying attention to distributional aspects and questions of who are recognized as stakeholders and become participants in the transition process, right? So who is recognized in this transition process? Because you have employers, you have taxpayers, you have parents, students, activists, voters, consumers, workers, etc., right? And just like, you know, climate and citizenship question is here is fascinating. And, you know, you could kind of talk about each one of these aspects quite a bit and honestly just have an entire class or lecture on it. But the ones we kind of talked about the most was the worker, consumer, and voter. And here's the thing, if you're a voter, right, and relatively informed, you know what your worldviews are, you know what kind of agenda you are interested in and want to pursue, and based on that, you know what kind of a political party you want to support, right? In Norway, you have you know, everything from the Red Party to the Progressive Party and the parties in between, the Liberal Party, Green Party, etc., right? And so there's a broader spectrum, and then in the US, you would effectively have the Republicans and Democrats, Though I have been a part of the Green Party in the US, and there's interesting stuff going on there, which I'd be eager to talk about for anyone interested. But, you know, we don't get any more than 1 or 2% of the vote. I think the most we got was with Rolf Nader in 2000. Was around, maybe it was, yeah, it was 2000 or 2004, where we got around 4%, which is quite a bit, 3 or 4%, something along those lines. But anyways, I'm going to try to stick to the conversation for today. So, you know, if you're a voter, that's the case. If you're a consumer, obviously, is like advertisements everywhere, right, for like, you know, green, sustainable products, everything from clothing to like washing material to, I mean, paper. I mean, you mention it, right? And there's that, and then there is like alternative transportation, and there is like, you know, buying an electric car, etc., so forth. With food, there's like veganism and raw veganism, etc., so forth. Plus, I mean, you have all the obvious like energy saving household appliances and. Anyway, so you, but as a consumer, you also have those options. Drink some tea here for a second, excuse me. And, but, you know, when it comes to our roles as workers, I mean, like, what is there to do? Like, how are we supposed to enact change in our workplaces? And if you come to think of it, it's kind of a question mark, right? Like, okay. So, as a result of that, I think this some of this thought talks and lecture came about, and it kind of goes into like worker agency, right? And how can workers and trade unions mobilize for, you know, energy transition? And there are two broad ways of looking at it. You have kind of like the climate jobs on the one hand that create jobs that directly reduce the carbon footprint of society. And this is kind of looked upon at a national or a global level even. You have, you know, the workers are effectively activists and, you know, there are highly specialized green skills based on the new green technologies, et cetera, so forth. And then on the other hand, you have the greening work, which is different from climate jobs because its focus isn't on creating jobs that directly reduce the carbon footprint of society. Instead, it's on reducing carbon footprint of existing labor processes. And it, you know, this is mainly done on a local level and is dependent on industrial relation systems. And, you know, the role of the worker isn't to be an activist anymore. It is to be an employee. And the thing is that it's not as highly specialized green skills in terms of the required skills as well. It's kind of more generic and specialized green skills. So, you know, in some ways, those are some of the main differences or the ways to look at these two. Now, I could go on, but I think I'll just try to wrap it up here by talking about one of my concerns, excuse me, for this process. And it's that if you look at, you know, the neoliberal era, like starting from Reagan and Thatcher, or at least like really being expanded upon and pursued from the late 70s, early 80s there, we see that. And that, and also like free trade deals in North America, you have NAFTA, and then there were the proposed transatlantic and transpacific partnerships under the Obama administration, which involved a lot more countries. And I think that, and also globalization, right? Workers in a majority of Western nations kind of feel pretty betrayed by their representatives, because these were ultimately passed, these bills and policies and agendas, you know, under the rhetoric and narrative of, you know, trickle-down economy and, the, you know, with the language of it's ultimately going to benefit the workers. But what we saw was, you know, kind of like deregulation and privatization of lots of industries that citizenry relied on. And Unions have also gotten weaker over the past century. So there is quite a bit of trust building that has to happen between the citizenry, workers, on one hand, and then kind of the state and nonprofits and private sector, among other shareholders, you know, whoever is involved in this effort to move towards climate jobs or greening work. And so these should kind of be pursued side by side. And, honestly, if anything, it is a great opportunity to do so, to strengthen the institutions that protect the workers, to improve social cohesion by reducing kind of class differences and wage differences. So just some stuff there to think about in this context of greening work, climate jobs, and how it relates to the broader, you know, not just energy justice and energy democracy agendas and frameworks, but also kind of to more social justice in general. One of the great resources I'd like to send you all to is the progressive.international. Kind of the idea is to unite and organize and mobilize progressive forces all around the world. And the people who are behind it are, you have Chomsky, you have Yanis Varoufakis, the former finance minister of Greece, and I believe also Bernie Sanders. So this is quite great, and there's good people, great ideas. And it was launched relatively recently in complete corporate media silence on it. So just wanted to give it a shout out. And with that, I think I'll just leave you there. I wish you all good health and good spirit. And I think above all, tranquility. Cheers.